Well, good morning, everyone. Let me read for us. Actually, you know what? I'm sorry. Can you stand up one more time as I read the gospel reading for us this morning? The gospel reading is out of Matthew chapter 13, verses 34, and then 44 through 46, and then 52. Jesus told the crowds all of these things in parables. Without a parable, he told them nothing. The kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field, which a man found and reburied. Then in his joy, he goes and sells all that he has and buys that field. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant in search of fine pearls. On finding one pearl of great value, he went and sold all that he had and bought it. And he said to them, "Therefore, every scribe who has become a disciple in the kingdom of heaven is like a master of a household who brings out of his treasure what is new and what is old." This is the word of the Lord. You may be seated. So in my experience, and you guys might have a different experience than me, but in my experience, everyone likes a good treasure hunt, right? Like, we like treasure hunts. I mean, everywhere from the youngest of children, Dora and her map, to the Pirates of the Caribbean, to the way that we are all in search of sort of treasures, whether that be balance or perfection or just happiness in our own lives. There is something kind of, there can be something kind of grueling about treasure hunting and something kind of fun about treasure hunting. There can be sacrifices made along the way when you're treasure hunting, but then it all pays off if you find the treasure, right? My parents used to do this thing where they would give us a gift, and it would be a small box or bag, and we'd open it up, and all that was inside was a piece of paper that had a clue, and we had to go figure out what the clue was, and it would say some rhyme, and then we'd go try to figure out where the next clue was, and it was hidden in a box or a bag somewhere, and then we'd open that one, and there'd be another clue, and three or four or five or six or seven clues later, we'd find the real present, which was usually too big to fit in a box or a bag, and therefore they have put it somewhere else, and we're treasure hunting to find the treasure. It was like the gift was one thing, the gift was one gift, and the hunt was like kind of like another gift, right? Like it was the fun thing before you got the treasure. Sort of like trivia meets an obstacle course, right? Like, it's kind of fun. A good treasure hunt can be hard to pass up. And I experienced this firsthand this week because I went into a very special store called the Goodwill Outlet. And I don't know if you've ever been to the Goodwill Outlet, but there's the Goodwill on Berry Hill. And there's the store in the front. I've been to that store many times. Donated things there, shopped there. But the Goodwill Outlet's in the back. And it takes someone brave of heart to go to the Goodwill Outlet side of the store. But one of our friends said that she had been and found all kinds of cool stuff. So I said, okay, I'm going to go. It's apparently pay by the pound. So it's like 50 cents a pound or something, depending on what you get, I guess. And let me tell you, that proved to me that adults are just as much into treasure hunting as children are, because there were experts in this store. And I realized I was the total noob, right? Like, I touched things I wasn't supposed to touch at the wrong time and got scolded for it. Like, the experts had gloves on, you know? And you could tell they were experts because their faces were, like, stoic, and their eyes were like laser beams, and they were just like on a mission to find their treasure, whatever that was. I mean, most of the things in those big, shallow, blue carts was like broken, trash, like just not great stuff. But apparently you can find some treasure in there. I have a picture of it in your handout. This is what it looks like, these blue long bins. If you've never been there, it was pretty interesting. Yeah. But after being there, you know, it was like, yeah, treasure. And parables, we've been talking about parables for the past 3 weeks. Parables are kind of like hidden treasure. They're like little mysteries hiding their truth inside, and you gotta like work to kind of discover what that truth is. You can't really find it without searching it out. And I've used this box a few times now, and I've pulled some old parables out of it. Some old treasures hiding different mysteries and deep truths. But this morning, as we look at these last two parables, I promise this is our last week on parables. I wonder if we might pull something new out of this box. Something true, but new. A new parable to consider. I wonder if we have learned enough collectively through these weeks, have kind of honed this parable craft enough to be like the disciple in the last line of our scripture who pulls out what is old and what is new. But before we try to craft some mysterious truth out of our lived experience, it might be a good idea just to review parables, just to review the rules of parables, right? So, first off, parables, we don't read in order to master them, right? They are free, actually, to be reinterpreted in every generation. And they actually read us, right? So like a parable is doing its work when it reads us. And they try to connect to some part of our own lives. But sometimes it's hard to do because they don't always open, right? So they don't always open to us. And so sometimes it's hard to connect with them. Peter Rollins, who's a kind of philosopher and theologian, says that this truth that can be spoken about parables, that they contain this truth that can only be spoken by those who live it and only heard by those who heed it. So he says that parables can only be spoken by those who live it and only heard by those who heed it. And maybe that's why Jesus is like, whoever has ears, hear. He says, Peter Rollins says, in the parable, truth is not expressed via some detached logical discourse that would be employed to educate us, but rather it emanates from the creation of a lyrical discourse, capital D-I-S, separation, discourse, that inspires us and transforms us. A discourse being that form of miscommunication that sends us spinning off course and onto a new course, right? Parables are like these just funny stories that start in our world, but by the end, we're somewhere weird and unfamiliar. And there's sort of two ways to respond to these parables. One way is to be like, huh, that's weird, and move on, right? Like, and then there's the other way. The other way is that you're disturbed enough by the parable to keep thinking about it. You're disturbed enough to keep wondering what it actually could mean. And you get a hint that there might be a treasure in it. There might be a mystery in it. And so you keep searching. And for these old parables, the ones we've been looking at from the Bible, the truth isn't so obvious. Because we don't live at the time the Bible was written. We aren't the people that these parables were spoken to. And so we have to really dig into the context of when these parables were spoken to understand them at all, right? Like, God's Spirit can work through them and use them in an abstract way, certainly. But to really understand what they would have gotten at in the culture, we have to do some digging. So Caleb and I have tried to open up a few of these over the last couple weeks so that we can know what their original context is. And this context gives them life beyond what we can imagine, right? And of course, the point of all of these parables, the reason why Jesus says he's telling them, is to explain in words, without being concrete at all, what the kingdom of heaven is like. These parables, Matthew says, is how Jesus told the crowds all things. So if this is how Jesus told the crowds all things, it might be important to understand how these parables work for us. So, like today's parable, we have this person who finds this treasure in a field. Now, we don't know, but I think that there's a good chance that this person who finds this treasure in a field is poor. You know why? Because he has to go sell everything he has to buy this field, right? Like, so he finds this treasure that's been previously hidden, and he goes and he sells all that he has to have enough money to buy this field. And then presumably he, you know, is going to get the treasure and make a profit of some sort. Maybe he'll live off of it. Now, if you're this man and you find a treasure in the field, what do you not want to do? Tell anyone that you found a treasure in this field. So when you go off auctioning off everything you own, your food, your clothes, your whatever you have to live on, it might seem a little strange to others. Like, they might be like, what has this person, what have they gone crazy? Like, what is going on here? What is this person doing? They might have seemed a little bit crazy, because the reason why this person sells everything they have is hidden, just like the treasure in the field. It's a hidden reason. Their actions from the outside would have seemed a little crazy. And then we get this other parable immediately following, both just one sentence, which is really, you know, they're short things, these little parables. But it's a very similar parable, right? It's a parable about a merchant who is in search of fine pearls. Now, this is one where it's really, unless you have the context, it's hard to understand what's really going on here. While the first parable could be any person, the treasure, though hidden, is obviously of value. We don't know if this first person was actually looking for a treasure or not, or if they just happened upon it. In the second parable, we have this merchant, totally, kind of like a totally different version of the same parable. We get this merchant, and he's looking for a treasure. He's looking for fine pearls. But we might hear merchant and think, I don't know, what connotations come to mind with merchant? Traveler, that's good. That's probably pretty accurate. Like, positive or negative? Neutral or positive, okay, I don't know. I think in our society, we kind of have like a positive merchant, traveler, wholesaler, maybe respectable, you know, person. Not respectable, okay? Merchant, this word for merchant is only used one other time in the New Testament, the exact form of this Greek word for merchant. It's not complimentary. It's in Revelation chapter 18, verse 3. And in this verse in Revelation, it says, this verse connects the kings of the earth who have committed fornication with the whore, who is, by the way, in Revelation talk, Rome, to the merchants, there's the word, merchants of the earth, who have waxed rich and through the abundance of the earth's delicacies, and should weep and mourn for Rome because she buys their delicacies no more. So this is like pretty negative stuff when it comes to merchants in the Bible. And we know this historically and from biblical literature. So it's a pretty solid case that this merchant would be seen as a pretty shady fellow. You know, it's a pretty judgmental thing. It's kind of like one of those things if Jesus said, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant. You would be like, what? Like, I'm going to compare this to like a blood diamond seller, right? Like someone who uses children who die in the mines to harvest blood diamonds for their benefit. Like, the kingdom of heaven is like a blood diamond dealer. Like, this is kind of something of the connotation. And pearls, I don't know what you think of pearls. I mean, pearls have value, right? Like, they're expensive-ish. But I don't think we understand how much value they have here. Pearls were like the rarest of all things at this time. And so for it to be pearls, we know that this merchant is wealthy. This is a wealthy merchant. They have the money to search for fine pearls. So this merchant is rich, unlike perhaps the person who finds the treasure in the field. This person is looking for pearls. But in this parable, the merchant does not get what they are looking for, right? I know it kind of sounds like they do. But instead of find pearls, plural, they find one pearl, a single one of great value. Now, the man who found the treasure in the field and sold everything to get the field, I'm guessing that he could probably live off of what he found in that treasure box. Now, if you're a merchant in search of fine pearls and you find one pearl of great value and you sell everything else in order to buy it, I'm just saying, pearls don't produce fruit. You can't live off of a pearl. And so it's like a couple of things immediately happen to this merchant. Number one, the merchant is no longer a merchant. He's no longer in the market for buying anything. He has his one pearl. The second thing that happens immediately is that he changes his identity. His identity from being a merchant, he's no longer a merchant, and now he is a man in possession of a very fine pearl, right? Like, this is who he has become in his pursuit. See, these parables are similar, right? They both have people finding treasure. Both treasures are hidden and they're hard to find. Both sell everything in order to get this treasure. And both stories are told by Jesus in order to tell us about the treasure of the kingdom of heaven. But these parables are also different. These people had different socioeconomic statuses. One was looking for pearls and found one pearl. The other, we aren't sure if the person was looking for anything when he found a treasure in a field. We don't know if the, So before we, you know, before your minds start to wonder and try to nail down, you know, the moral of these stories to make connections or take a lesson from this, I think I want to ask you an unconventional question. And I think that this question is kind of at the heart of these stories. And the question is this: how do you know when you found a hidden treasure? How do you know when you found a hidden treasure? And the second is like it. What do you do? How do you know when you found a hidden treasure, and what do you do? Now, I have to admit, when I was at Goodwill, I did not find much in the pay-by-the-pound side of things. You know, I kind of looked around, but it was pretty stressful over there, to be honest. It was dark. It was smelly. There were like apocalyptic signs happening, and I was kind of stressed out by the whole situation. So I didn't find much. So I, you know, walked around to the retail side of the store. And, you know, I wasn't in a hurry. It's my day off. I was just kind of looking around, and sometimes I like to just meander and look, and, you know, it's kind of hard to find treasure when you're stressed. It's kind of hard to find treasure when you're in a hurry. It's a thing about treasure. Like, you kind of have to have the time to look for it to find it. But as I was slowly entering the Goodwill side and meandering around, I was over by the men's shoes. I was looking for men's soccer cleats to see if they had any men's soccer cleats. And while I was over there, I spotted this pair of shoes that didn't belong in the men's. It looked like a girl's pair of shoes. And I was like, oh, that's weird. Look at that. So I like picked up these shoes. I looked at them like, oh, you know, I have this like suede bag that I recently just learned how to clean and take care of. And I was like, these look like suede. And so I look at them, yeah, I think these are suede. And then I look at the insole of the shoe, and it said ABLE. And I was like, oh, I know the brand Able. That's a brand that's like, does like sustainable and ethical like shoe creation, right? Like I already know like these shoes cost like $125 new or something like that. I'm like, huh, this could be a treasure. I keep looking. They're like in pristine shape. If anyone's ever wearing these shoes, it would be hard to say. I mean, they're in great shape. And then I look at the size, and they're not girls, they're women's, but they're size 6. And I do a little math in my head, and I'm like, the story's about to grow into a size, a women's size 6. This is pretty good. So I'm like, turn them over, look for the price. $7.99. Like, not only that, it's a green sticker. It's half off green stickers today. Which means, by the way, that this sandal has been sitting here longer than anything else in this store because it's the oldest item that was donated. That's what they do the half off on. All kinds of people have walked by these $125 practically brand new sandals and not discovered them, not known. I mean, in a sea of the shoe department at Goodwill, which is basically like the blood diamond merchantry of shoe trade, right? Like, there is one golden, it is golden, sandal that's like $3.99 that was ethically made, fair trade, sustainable, and suede. That is going to fit my daughter by next summer. Like, this is pretty amazing. You know, I don't know if I had to sell everything, if I only had $3.99, like if I had to sell everything I had to get $3.99 to buy that sandal, I think probably these sandals would have almost hit this parable, right? Like, almost hit it. I didn't have to sell anything to buy these sandals for $3.99. But I wonder if I would look at them differently if I had. You know what they say about turning $100 into $110? That it takes hard work. And then the follow-up is like, how do you turn $100 million into $110 million? And then you say, it's inevitable. So, but how do you turn $100 into $110? It's hard work. But these sandals for $3.99, you could probably turn into $50, $75, $100 online pretty quick. You know, sell them secondhand. So the question would be, is if I only had $3.99, would I buy the sandals in order to keep them and treasure them? Or would I sell them so that I could live on the proceeds and turn $3.99 into, I don't know, $69.99 or something like that overnight? It's kind of funny. It makes you think. Most of what we find in the world is unnecessary, cheap, junk, broken goods, Goodwill outlet, used up resources, stuff, right? But the kingdom of heaven isn't like those things. Jesus is saying the kingdom of heaven is rare. It's like a treasure buried in a field. And the parables seem to say that there are many things that you can pass up, that you can sell, that you can give up on, that you can scroll through. But if you find something of great value, like it can change your perspective. It can change your identity. It can change what you value. And now you might be looking for it or you might not. You might be surprised when you find it, or you might have been looking for it the whole time. It might be hidden. That's a key word in all these parables. It's hidden. The yeast is hidden in the dough. The treasure is hidden in the field. It might be like a planted garden before the harvest. You may not be sure what's about to come. It might be like an undisclosed pregnancy, or yeast that makes the bread rise, or wheat planted among weeds, or affordable housing in Nashville. A pearl of great price among other cheap jewels that look identical to the naked eye. How do you discover that pearl? And when you find it, how do you know? And when you find it, what do you do? If we can say anything about parables, it's that they tell us that the kingdom of heaven is hidden in plain sight. It's hidden right in the ordinary places where we live our lives. All the parables start here, in bread, in sowing seeds, in fields, in pregnancy, in all of these ordinary things, in discarded jewelry boxes and discarded boxes taken to Goodwill. In all of these ordinary things, there is something that could change everything. And your actions when you find the extraordinary may seem a little odd to everyone else, using everything that you have to obtain this treasure. So, but these parables, like I said, they're kind of old, right? And so sometimes they can be hard to access. So I went in my closet. And I kind of keep my main jewelry next to my bed in a little drawer. But then, like, I have my other jewelry, you know, the stuff that I don't really wear very much or, you know, like as much. And that is in the back of my closet in, like, a little hanger thing. And so I went to the little hanger thing in the back of the closet and looked, searched around, and I found, this is what I found. I found this necklace. And it has a freshwater pearl on it. And look, here's a pearl. I don't think pearls have the same value to us today as they did then. Which begs the question, like, what does? What would our parable of the pearl look like, feel like, sound like, be like? And so I think we need to use some creative imagination to even start to understand these parables. What is the new thing? And so I'm going to give you two ideas, and then we're going to take the rest of our time, and we're going to attempt to write parables. I know you guys are so excited about this. Just follow the rules. You don't have to share them unless you want to, but I'm going to give you a few thoughts before we do that. Okay, first thought is this. First idea is this. We're doing money school this summer with our kids, and in money school, the kids do chores, and then they earn money, and then their money is divided in like six categories when they earn it. So in each dollar, they only get 30 cents that they can choose what to spend it on, right? Well, Daily, my daughter Daily, had accumulated $12 in her spending money, but she spent $4 on a popsicle at the ice cream truck a couple weeks ago. So now she's down to $8. And this week we've been doing fun things before school starts, and we were going to go to the zoo, and she said, I want to take my money, my $8, to the zoo because I want to buy cotton candy. And I'm like, okay, you can choose to spend it on whatever you want, I guess. But I'm already thinking, like, the cotton candy at the zoo, like, how much is that going to cost? She takes her little money up there to the cash register. Of course, there's no prices on the cotton candy. Let me show you. This is the tub that contains the cotton candy that Daily bought at the zoo. It's not very large. And the lady at the register said, big spenders. That'll be $5.90. Little did she know that all Daily has is $8. And Daily's like happily counting out $6 to the hand to the lady. This is the pearl of great price for a 7-year-old. This is what she will spend all of her money on. And she's one of those, she doesn't have buyer's remorse. She is happy with whatever she buys. We just agree to let her buy whatever she wants because we know she's going to be happy with it in the end, even if we don't think it has any value. There you go. There's a pearl of great price. Second thing I'll show you before we get started is a meme. I printed it out to show you. I thought it was really funny. And then it gets me to the last thing, which is Jesus. So, you know, nobody talks about Jesus's miracle of having 12 close friends in his 30s. Am I right? So, pearl of great price here. There's some ideas. Now, it's your turn. I'm gonna turn on a couple of music, not Christian music, just some music so it's not like totally quiet in here. But here's what I want you to answer. What is the kingdom of heaven like? What is like a parable, but like a new one? How have any of these parables, have they connected with you? In what ways? What are you thinking? And if you wrote a parable today about the kingdom of heaven from your own experience, what would it say? Isn't it interesting that all these parables are about things hidden that change everything, and they're things hidden in the ordinary, and it's Jesus who tells them, and Jesus is just like an ordinary person, but like the hidden secret that some people miss and some people get is that Jesus is God with us. That Jesus is God's presence with us. And it's like Jesus' very life is like the ultimate parable. It's like so easy to miss. Anyway, I thought I should take it home to Jesus since Jesus told these parables, but...